was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up the shovel and walked to the mine. I loaded 16 guns from Numberland Cool, and the scoundrel said, "Bella, bless my soul, you load 16 guns, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper and dense. Say, Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my suit to the company store. If you see me come, you better step aside. A lot of men didn't, and a lot of men dying. I want this to find."
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock, and coming up next is Alternative Radio.
...who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bread and Ink Cafe, located at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland, serving family-style breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Lunch provided by Aviv, located at 1125 Southeast Division Street in the Hosford-Abernethy neighborhood. Open daily from lunch to dinner, Aviv serves vegan-friendly Middle Eastern cuisine. Dinner provided by Le Bistro Montage, located in Portland's Industrial District at 301 Southeast Morrison Street. Le Bistro Montage serves Creole cuisine, open daily from dinner to late night. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO's prize drawing rules. Everyone who donates will be entered into the drive prize drawings. No purchase necessary to be entered. Making a purchase or contribution will not improve an individual's chance for winning. The fall drive prize drawing is subject to all applicable federal, state, and local laws and regulations. Void where prohibited or restricted by law or regulations. To enter, call 877-500-5266 between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. and provide your name, complete address with zip code, date of birth, and day evening phone numbers with area code. Only one entry per person per household per year will be accepted during the drive drawing period. Entries may be mailed with the aforementioned information to KBOO Radio, care of Membership Department, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, postmarked by September 22nd. Incomplete or late entries will not be accepted. Winner will be determined in a random drawing on Thursday, October 4th. Winner will be notified by telephone, mail, or email after Monday, October 8th. For a copy of official prize drawing rules and restrictions, and for the names of the winners, go to kboo.fm/fall2018drawing. And thank you.
I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Francis Fox Piven on What Movements Do. The ruling class is organized and well-funded. What can be done to confront and defeat concentrations of power? As a veteran activist once said, organized people can beat organized money. There's a rich history of ordinary people getting together and doing extraordinary things. Take the disability rights movement. Who gave that a chance? Oh, we can't build ramps and put in elevators. It'll cost too much. Or another example is the civil rights movement. African Americans achieved voting rights after overcoming fierce resistance from entrenched white segregationists. There are contemporary movements, such as Black Lives Matter, which protest against police killings of African Americans. Teachers in Arizona, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and elsewhere organized and went on strike and demanded better pay, and they got it. Movements to be effective embody the immortal words of Muhammad Ali: float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Our guest today is Frances Fox Piven. She's a leading activist scholar. She's Distinguished Professor of Political Science and Sociology at the City University of New York. She's the author of numerous books, including Challenging Authority and Lessons for Our Struggle. She spoke at the International Socialist Conference in Chicago. And now, Frances Fox Piven.
Well, but first, I want to say how glad I am to be here. Because it really is a very dark and uncertain moment. in American politics, in world politics. And it's a time where the forces of reaction, of cruelty, of imperialism, of war making are on the move everywhere. And at times like this, we need to be with each other, we need to be on the move, but we need the support and encouragement that we get from standing shoulder to shoulder with people like us. So thank you for being here. You know, it's a very dangerous moment. I probably don't have to put that into words. Everybody knows it. We get up in the morning and we go to our computers to see what horrendous thing has happened since we last looked at the screen or clicked on our phones. I've been around a long time, and I have to say, I've never seen a period quite as dismal as this. I don't want to leave it at dismal. Don't worry, I won't. quite as dismal, but also quite as uncertain as this. You know, professionally, I'm a political scientist, and political scientists pretend to be able to show you the patterns in political development, which should lead you to understand what's going to happen next. No one knows what's going to happen next. There's a little bit of a glimmering light to that, because it also means that maybe we can affect what happens next. But still, I wouldn't understate how dangerous this moment in American politics, and because we're the most powerful, we're the imperial center of the world, how dangerous this moment is for the entire world, for humankind. And that's important to remember, because it makes it more urgent to try to stop the politics that is making it so uncertain and so dangerous. Stopping what's happening has become very, very important, I think. Just think about it. The almost total official power of a right-wing, partially lunatic, but partially incredibly greedy and short-sighted Republican Party now controls the Supreme Court, the presidency, the Congress of the United States. They also control the major branches of a majority of the state governments of the United States. Their control of the court is likely to last for decades. And behind this apparatus of formal power, there are unhinged business interest groups that are on the war path as we have not seen for many decades in the United States. I am talking about fossil fuel interests that are determined to get the stuff out of the ground before global warming and the people destroyed by global warming stop them. They want it now. And I'm also talking about financial chicanery and the banking interests behind financial chicanery that are also, they're on such thin ice that they're not planning for their grandchildren. They want to grab it now, and they are very dangerous. And that dangerousness, that predatory, risk-prone character is reflected in the political apparatus that they sustain and fuel with their money. So we have to stop them. Before we do anything else, we have to stop them. It's a political crisis. And stopping them means, I think, joining with the forces of resistance that are already emerging in the United States and elsewhere. Now, a large part of that resistance is in the movements, you know, all kinds of movements, from Me Too, the Me Too movement. They're not calling themselves socialists, most of them, but some of them are. Some of them are, and some of the people who are trying to move into electoral politics are calling themselves socialists now. But, you know, some people say that the other side of the dark side of the Trump era is, in fact, the strength and vigor of the resistance. And the resistance, with its huge contingent of women, women on the move, this is so encouraging. The resistance is really very important. Perhaps the main thing that we have to rely on to stop them, because we have to stop them before we can reverse the policy changes they've set in motion. Yeah. You know, usually to stop the regime in power and then to build a better society, we need power, don't we? Well, usually when people think about power, they think about power as a result of resources and individual attributes. Power because you're such a good speaker, you're so good looking, you have a whole bunch of money, you can hire and fire a lot of people, you can buy a lot of propaganda. Those are real sources of power. But there's another kind of power that almost never gets mentioned. And that's the kind of power that resides in the cooperative relations of society, in the institutionalized cooperation of society. We live in families, we live in communities, we go to schools, we go to work, we produce things, we have a store, we have a commons. Those are networks of cooperation. The networks of cooperation are not all as pretty as the commons, the school, the family. The networks of cooperation include the biggest businesses, the biggest financial firms that are strangling entire nations. But all of these social institutions are networks of cooperation. And networks of cooperation reach very far into the society. They involve all of us. You get up in the morning, you go get your bagel and coffee. The person who serves you the coffee and toasts the bagel, is cooperating with you, you're giving them money, the nanny is coming taking care of your children. Now, those are not egalitarian relations, but they are cooperative relations. And they involve everybody. When you went to get the coffee, you had to cross the street, you cooperated by crossing the street at the light. That also was cooperation. And the car drivers cooperated by stopping their cars at the light. Also cooperation. Now, everybody has to cooperate, or not cooperate, but they also have the ability to not cooperate, to break the rules, to perhaps make demands, have aspirations, to wonder about a better society, and to gather together and refuse to cooperate.
And now let's go to Ani and Becky in Pledge Central.
Good morning. This is Becky. I'm joined by Ani, just as Ray said.
Good morning.
And we are here and excited to be joining you on Alternative Radio, a weekly program that KBOO airs from David Barsamian. We, with his help, with your help, will claim the airwaves and ask you amplify your voice with your support for KBOO. Call 877-500-5266 now with your pledge of support. We've got other ways to go about it too. You could go to the website kboo.fm, click on donate, but mostly what we're looking for is solidarity, and Frances Fox Piven is talking specifically about cooperation. That is what KBOO is community organizing.
Absolutely true. And so you know that you hear great information on KBOO's news and public affairs. That's why you tune in. That's why you listen. That's why you tell other people about KBOO. And you know that KBOO is there to amplify the voices that must be heard, to make a difference in these times. So right now is the time to give back to this community and to become a member of KBOO this morning. Support Alternative Radio. Support KBOO. Support your whole community when you give at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
And if you become a member now, or not if, when, because the when is now and the time is now, you will be entered to win a prize. That number again is 877-500-5266 for your chance to win 12 bottles of wine, 3 varieties of Pinot, and from St. Joseph's Winery. You can go to kboo.fm for rules and details on the prizes. Also, shout out to Aaron from North PDX, who came in person and got a KBOO knit cap. All right.
Yeah, too. It was great to meet Aaron this morning when he came in person. We love it when folks walk in the door at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and say, yes, I want to join KBOO Community Radio. I want to see how you put my money to work. I want to take a tour of the studios.
Holy cats. And you can do so when you come in, but you can also call and get a sense of the place when you talk to your amazing volunteer, our amazing folks, our smiling faces that come through the air, just like Gabrielle and Sherwood, who is a new member.
Woohoo!
Heard all of us working together in harmony, I guess, is a relative term, but that doesn't matter because really a community organizing tool like KBOO is sometimes made of different constituent parts and not everybody has to agree, and that's the beautiful thing about it.
It's true. Discordant radio, really, at times, and we are all here because we are passionate about so many issues, about our communities, about music, about poetry or theater or the visual arts or the literary arts. These are all things that KBOO offers throughout the week. And right now we're asking you to be here as a community supporter, as a new member of KBOO, or maybe somebody who has a membership that's lapsed for a little while. Come on back in. Jump in. It's great to have you back. We'd love your participation. Please give us a call at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. We're looking to raise $300 before 10 o'clock this morning. And with your help, that's very possible. I'm going to go ahead and suggest that you give $5 a month. You're a new member. Maybe you haven't given to KBOO before.
Heckin' yes.
Maybe you are new to the area and you're not even sure what KBOO is. Jump on in. We are your community radio station. We are your accessible radio. You can come in and learn how to make the media. You can become a program producer or audio engineer. You could do a number of things here with your community radio station, but it all starts with your call right now to make sure that we are financially stable and that we are here for you. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
I would love to remind you that also this kind of radio has a value in your life. Right now, you're listening to David Barsamian's Alternative Radio. You're listening to Frances Fox Piven. You were learning about what community organizing might look like, networks of cooperation that are both deeper and more full than we even perceive on the daily basis. I can't imagine a world without KBOO here, and I know you out there also would have that kind of feeling. You share in the value of having a community made accessible media for all. That is KBOO, and we want you to take the first step and become a member now. 877-500-5266. You can join at the $5 a month level. All contributions are super valued, including your time. And so the first step, however, to find out any of that is calling 877-500-5266 or going securely online with a click, kboo.fm.
Now, from time immemorial, the left has been preoccupied with a form of refusal which is illuminates human history. And that form of refusal is the strike. It's collective refusal to cooperate. We think of it as located in industrial mass production. Industrial workers go out on strike. But all sorts of people have the ability to drag their heels and to not cooperate and to collectively not cooperate. You know, I think the most penetrating historians of the Civil War in the United States point to the refusal of plantation slaves to function, to do the economic work on the plantation toward the end of the Civil War as the definitive thrust against the Confederacy. The Union won the war because enslaved Southern blacks refused to cooperate with the plantation economy. So movements do a lot of things. They have banners. We have songs. At this conference, you have great chants. Really great. And so movements are a lot of noise. They make noise. They have spectacles. They bring together great crowds of people. And that's what we think of usually when we think of movements. We think of crowds and noise and so forth. But movements also involve this incredible activation of the power of refusal of ordinary people. And that isn't so noisy, necessarily. Sometimes it is. Sometimes there are noisy picket lines, but it can be very quiet. In the 1960s, I worked at a poverty program called Mobilization for Youth on the Lower East Side, and I got to spend a lot of time on the streets and in the community rooms and so forth. And I also had certain obligations and one to the project, and one of them was, I'm a social scientist, was to evaluate what one of their programs was doing, how they were doing it. They had service centers in storefronts, three of them, on the Lower East Side. And in those service centers, there were social workers seated behind wooden tables. And nobody exactly was sure what were the social workers doing. And the community came into the storefronts, people from the community, and they spoke to the social workers. But we had to do reports to the Ford Foundation or NIMH or whatever on what we were doing. So we made up a little form. And the form asked, well, what did the person come in for and what did you do? It wasn't very sophisticated social science. So the answers were the person came in because they couldn't pay the rent or buy clothing for the kids when school started, and so we helped them get on welfare. Well, we looked at a lot of these forms and we began to wonder why these people who were apparently eligible for welfare, because the social workers got them on welfare, why they weren't on welfare to begin with. And that made us look at survey data from the Lower East Side, then New York City, then other cities, and we came to the sort of seat of the pants conclusion that only one out of three of the people eligible for welfare were actually receiving it. So we began to talk to people about organizing welfare recipients, and that put us in touch with a lot of sort of emerging welfare recipient organizations in New York, in Philadelphia, in Cleveland, and other cities in the country. And we proposed that we launch a campaign to demand full benefits from the welfare department. And we had an analysis of why that might work, of the kinds of pressures that such a campaign in the early 1960s would create for the National Democratic Administration, and how those pressures might ricochet up through the federal system. But once you work with people, you form bonds to them, and friendships, and loyalties. I care a lot about the fate of poor women, even especially because I think at that time, women's movement, the second women's movement, was emerging. And it was not a movement of poor women at that point in time. And that really was very important to me, and it was very important to the women in welfare rights who felt rejected by the early feminist movement. There is a tradition on the left which has great confidence in workers and believes that if women on welfare became workers, then they would become politicized members of unions, members of the proletariat, and develop a political capacity that they don't otherwise have. I haven't seen evidence of that. Women on welfare would say, I've been working all my life. And, you know, I think I deserve a break. I deserve a benefit check. I deserve some help raising these kids. And, you know, they do try to raise the kids. So for, you know, about 15 years, I was very immersed in welfare rights movement. And I still have friends that from that period. And I think they were right. And they've suffered since that time. They and the people who, in a sense, replaced them in the ranks of the poor, of the American poor, the treatment of the poor since the 1960s, since they were really on the march, since they were politicized, since they, once, after they began to think that they had rights and that they could occupy welfare centers to fight for those rights, there was, of course, a backlash, just as there was for the larger black freedom movement. Because the welfare rights movement was only part of the black freedom movement, after all. And the backlash meant that people were smashed down when they tried to make demands, that they were isolated from each other. But most horrible, they were demeaned and ridiculed by presidents of the United States, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and even Bill Clinton. This is truly irresponsible leadership. And not only were they berated and denigrated with language from the White House, but there was cut after cut to the programs on which they depended.
And welcome back. This is Becky. I'm joined by Ani.
And you've been listening to Frances Fox Piven here on Alternative Radio, which we bring to you on KABU every Tuesday morning. This is the time that you can step forward and claim the airwaves for your very own by dialing 877-500-5266. Those are the numbers that get you into KABU's fall membership drive, where we want to say welcome. Welcome to the KABU community. We know you're already there with your ears and with your heart and with your mind. Now we're asking you to be a financial supporter at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.org. AR.fm.
Becoming a member is very easy with a click or a call, and you will be entered to win a prize. For your chance to win 12 bottles of wine from St. Joseph's Winery, call 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm for rules and details on all the prizes. You are more informed because of alternative radio every single week that comes on. David Barsamian is a huge supporter of community radio across the nation, and KBOO joins in a community of radio that is made accessible, that is meant to be a relief to the commercial interests that you hear on most other parts of the spectrum. So what we're looking for you to do is make it KBOO official. Call 877-500-5266 and come in at a $5 a month sustaining membership. You know that this radio must continue, and with your sustaining membership, you ensure that to be the case, and you can get a heckin' cute black beanie that keeps radio and KBOO close to your dome. 877-500-5266. That's the number to call, but you can also click online, kboo.fm. It is secure, it is fast, and I love it.
It's absolutely easy to do, and it's a deceptively simple act. It's deceptively simple because it is quick and easy, but it means so very much. It is a way to empower your entire community with just a little monthly gift to your community radio station as we make sure the airwaves remain accessible to everyone that is passionate about giving forth information that is relevant to our lives, information that we need. You know, our news and public affairs programs are made in large part by local community members. We do air some nationally syndicated programming. David Barsamian's Alternative Radio is a great example of that because he brings forth such important voices, really just preeminent thinkers of our times, and we benefit from hearing these long-form lectures from people like Francis Scott Piven this morning. So please call in right now with your support to make sure you are a part of continuing this great program. Please call right now, $5 a month or $60 all at once, or another amount that you feel compelled to give this morning. Whatever you can give, we would love to accept. Please do pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
One of the achievements of the welfare rights movement, not just of the welfare rights movement, also of the larger Black freedom movement, but one of their achievements was they forced the liberalization of the program known as AFDC, welfare. So benefits rose. The staff in welfare centers became somewhat more courteous and efficient. People were armed by their own sense of rights and by the fact that they had lawyers too from the welfare rights movement. But once the movement subsided, of course the cuts began to roll in. Not only the nasty ways of talking about poor people, poor women trying to raise a bevy of kids on their own, but the cuts and the forced work programs and the range of ways to humiliate these women. I don't know if any of you remember how in New York City, when Rudolph Giuliani, you know, he hasn't always been Trump's lawyer, when he was the mayor of New York, he presided over the implementation in New York of the Personal Responsibility Act, which was welfare reform, but it's really welfare cuts. And the form that welfare cuts took is that one form it took is that women were assigned to work crews in city government in New York. And you know, they were made to wear day glow vests as they worked on the side of roads or in the parks. What was that about? I think that was just like the denigration of welfare recipients of paupers in medieval England, where if people asked for a handout, they were tied to carts on market day. or they were branded. And this is a form of public humiliation. And our political leaders have been doing that to poor people since the 1960s, really. Back in the 1960s, there were people who associated with Commentary magazine, who neocons, in other words, there were people who were very angry at intellectuals who supported the black movement. And their argument was that the United States, under the leadership of the Democratic Party, not the New Deal Democratic Party anymore, but a much chastened and worn-out Democratic Party without unions, that the United States was becoming a social democracy, and what was really dangerous and interrupting that progression was the black freedom movement. Now, they couldn't scold blacks because they would be hooted at, but they could scold white intellectuals who supported the black movement. I've heard people say that Occupy Wall Street failed. You know, I think that's a really wacky thing to say. Occupy Wall Street, well, it was a relatively small action. Yeah. A few hundred people in a park. And I've been to a lot of Occupies in other cities too, and they were all like that, relatively small, very nice, very friendly, and very talented. These kids, and they were mainly kids, were so good at doing what every movement tries to do, which is to communicate a critique of the society and to communicate an alternative portrait of how we could live together. It's one of the things that movements do. They try to disrupt, they try to make things stop, but they also try to communicate, partly because they want to influence a broader public, and partly because they're always trying to get more people to join the movement. Occupy was so good at doing this. Come on, can't you remember how they changed political discourse in the United States? How many times had we written for little newspapers and for big newspapers and tried to change the discourse? That's what we always say we're doing. I've written so many books. Occupy had a much bigger impact on the public discourse than I did. Everybody knows what the 1% and the 99% are. Now, it's true that Occupy didn't do the whole job by any means. They had to get bigger, there had to be more people in the movement, and we had to make more trouble. We had to use our different kinds of strike power. But one group can't do everything, and we can't do it all at once. So there's much more to be done, and we're going to go on to do it, I think.
Yeah, right. I would love your thoughts on the revival of the strike, and particularly in these, you know, so-called red states. And we're seeing these teacher strikes ripple across the country.
Well, I loved it. I was so cheered by it. So what lessons can we take from it? I think there are a couple. One is the teachers' unions did not organize the strike. We have to take the lesson of mass, unorganized, relatively, we call it spontaneous. It's not really spontaneous. Right. It's just an official organization isn't doing it. Right. But we have to take from the teachers' strike a new confidence in the capacity of people to see their own power and to act on it. And even in a red state. But there's another lesson, I think. You know, the old left has always placed its confidence in industrial workers, workers in the mass production industries. The great blow that globalization struck to the labor movement was that globalization meant that investment in mass production could shift to low-wage parts of the globe. Everybody knows that problem. It was devastating, devastating for the industrial unions. And even though I'm critical for unions, I think we're much better off with unions. But notice who struck. It was teachers. And notice also how militant the nurses are. Mm-hmm. So even though they tell us, old-timers who want to discourage a youthful movement, they tell us that, and I've heard labor leaders say this, we can't talk about striking now. It's not quite true. We have to be careful when we talk about striking. We have to figure out who can strike. Who can't be replaced by a computer message that sends investment to Bangladesh? And that is teachers, nurses, all kinds of service workers, the nannies that take care of the kids, of the women who work now on Wall Street. A lot of people can't be replaced with the click of a computer.
And that's Frances Fox Piven here on Alternative Radio on KBOO. I'm Becky. I'm joined by Ani. And we are asking, raise your hand, stand up, count yourself in, and make a difference today by calling 877-500-5266. Become a member of KBOO Community Radio.
That's right. You are listening to Frances Fox Piven's lecture here on Alternative Radio, which we bring to you every Tuesday morning. And this is the time to show your support for David Bersamian's work and for the work of all of the volunteers here at the station that bring you that program, that download it, that do some post-production work, that bring it to you on the airwaves, that run the air room. All of this work is done by community members just like yourself, and we're asking you to step forward right now and help us claim the airwaves together. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. You're listening to this talk where Frances Fox Piven is talking about the importance of coming together to make the social change work, right? That we are in this land where the elite have a lot of control and a lot of power, but here we say the grassroots can come together, and she's outlining these ways in history that this has happened and this has worked, and we're asking you to come together right now in support of your community radio station, because what we can do together is tremendous. Please put yourself as part of this solution, part of the puzzle right here this morning. You are an important piece of that. Please do claim the airwaves right now with your contribution of $10 a month. It is a great way to join the station. You can adds up to $120 over the course of a year, and you can get any of our t-shirts as a thank you gift when you give at that amount or more. Please do call right now, 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
Your grassroots radio is about $300 away from our goal before 10 o'clock. So that number again, 877-500-5266. Please call, become a member right now, and, you know, serve you, your community, with learning, with culture, with information, with this more liberated entertainment. KBOO has been around for 50 years due to the support of folks just like you who are interested in making sure that your lifelong education continues, and we bring that to you every day with Alternative Radio, with KBOO's Public Affairs. There's a number of endless number of ways to contribute to KBOO, but right now we're asking for your support. 877-500-5266 is the number to call, or go online at kboo.fm and click the donate button. $10 a month is a great place to start. All contributions are valued, but the first step to find out anything about that, to become a member of this community, is to call the phone number 877-500-5266. Everyone involved with KBOO gives what they can, be it time or money or, you know, just simply their love and appreciation. And we are asking for you to join us in this important work. Enact positive change right now.
That's right. And everyone that calls 877-500-5266 today will be entered to win a prize. You can call that number, 877-500-5266, for your chance to win 12 bottles of wine, 3 varieties of Pinot from St. Joseph's Winery. And you can go to kboo.fm for all of the rules and details on all of the prizes. And right now, though, you know, the most important gift you get with KBOO every day, all day long, mm-hmm. is KBOO in your ear. That's right, KBOO keeping you informed and connected and inspired through relevant news and information, through precise and concise analysis and commentary, or through the music that inspires us and keeps our toes tapping and gives us hope for another day. Whatever it is, you know KBOO is there for you. And right now, we're asking you to be there for us. Please do call that number, 877-500-5266, or give online at kboo.fm.
Maybe you don't listen all the time, but what you do is listen to alternative radio at this time every Tuesday. If that is worth something to you, if you enjoy listening to eminent speakers, real like forward thinkers, this is the time to show your support by calling 877-500-5266. You know, stay tuned to Francis Fox Piven, but we're looking for your help for your membership, $300 before the end of this program. Please call with your support, 877-500-5266.
It's not quite true that the workers' movement can't survive globalization and internationalization. It's just that we have to adapt in our strategies to the constraints and the opportunities created by globalization. And I said opportunities because I think that globalization also creates opportunities. Globalization means extended chains of production. Things are produced everywhere and they have to be coordinated. There's a very fragile system of transportation and coordination through computer programs. And think about the huge warehouse centers where all this stuff is dumped. And then it has to be fed out over the country, over highways and complicated systems of truck transportation. This is a very fragile system. You know, in the old days, labor leaders used to talk about logistical workers. Yep. They were very interested in logistical workers. Logistical workers were like dockers. They worked in the port because they could jam things up in the port. Now there are a lot of places where you can jam things up, and we've got to learn how to do that.
So I'm keeping an eye on the clock here because I know we are going to have some questions from the room, but I wanted to ask also, since we were talking about poor people's movements, the new poor people's campaign that has just been kicking off.
Well, I take great cheer from the emergence of that movement. I have one observation about it. People sort of wonder why the poor aren't protesting right away, because of course they're the ones that feel the crunch of austerity politics first. And the reason is because they're most vulnerable. That's why. So one of the reasons that we should support protest movements elsewhere in the society is that it spreads, it gives people courage, it gives the poor courage. And we should also work with their movements. We should join their movements. I think we should join the Poor People's Campaign and support it with donations too.
Two questions. Three words. Yippies and the role that they bring to a movement with that kind of disruption. Guaranteed income. How does capital work? What does that mean? Is it good or bad in your opinion?
I've been an advocate of guaranteed income or basic income. It's got different names. I've also been very aware of the way some people on the left leery of guaranteed income or basic income. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that the left historically has always thought that power, the power of the working class, stemmed from the fact that they worked, that they had jobs. And because they had jobs, they could go on strike. Because they had jobs, they could organize in the first instance. They were brought together under one roof. And they could also go on strike and wield leverage against capital. That's one criticism. And the other criticism is the fear that a guaranteed income would lead to the wiping out of other social support programs and replace them with an inadequate guaranteed income. I think that it's possible that that could happen. That depends on the kind of guaranteed income program we legislate. We could do that with anything. We could decide that we'll have a guaranteed income program of $10 a month or something of that sort. But that's true also of unemployment benefits, Social Security. All of those programs are defined not only by the introductory sentence in the legislation, but they're also defined by the specific amounts of resources that are allocated to the program and the administrative method for distributing the benefits, whether the benefits are a matter of right, whether they can easily be defended, understood and defended by the recipients of the benefits. There are many features of the benefit system that matter in making good on the promise. Now, as for the idea that only workers have power, that the main source of popular power is through work. Well, I've been talking about that all evening, in effect. I think there are other sources of power by working people. The interdependence of society has to be examined and acted on. And if we don't see other kinds of power, it's because they don't want us to see those other kinds of power. Working people had to discover the power of the strike. And the power of the strike also exists in many other institutional settings.
So in terms of all our projects and the questions people were asking, I mean, I'm just reminded of the original Poor People's Campaign, I Am a Man, the sanitation worker strike, right, in Memphis, right? These links have been there historically. I'd love to hear from you if you have any more little tidbits about labor and welfare recipients or the Poor People's Campaign sort of coming together in that way. And just to put that out to everybody, to be aware of how we can bring those parts of the movement together.
Well, there was a lot of division between workers and poor people in the 1960s, between a largely white working class, often unionized, and black working people and black poor people and Hispanic poor people. A lot of animus. And often you had to choose sides. I know in principle we want the workers and the poor. Because after all, I always said that people on welfare are part of the working class. There's no question about that. And if there were any question, well, we've been putting them to work, haven't we? So they're part of the working class. But people's consciousness and the identities that they cherish and use in a way that is antagonistic to other members of the working class are there. They're there. Sometimes I think I at least felt that I had to stand with welfare recipients against workers. I remember one particular event where we blocked the doors and working class people came and kicked me in the shin. So,
and I think we will go with our last question.
I am a retired New York City train operator from Brooklyn, TW Local 100. And you mentioned Rudy Giuliani and his, what was it, the Personal Responsibility Program?
The Personal Responsibility Act was the name of the federal legislation.
Well, we had something that was probably part of that called the Work Experience Program. And I think
it's part of the same tendency,
How that worked, at least in transit. Now, first of all, the union saw that for what it was just a way to get cheap labor for the MTA. These folks were generally assigned to being station cleaners. They worked alongside of our union station cleaners. The union felt that those jobs should be filled by union members, which I agree with. But even though they worked alongside of the our union members, they had completely separate facilities. They were banned from our break rooms. They were banned from the toilets. Everything that we used, they were banned from, and they had their own separate but not terribly equal facilities for them. And that, I thought, was a bit harsh. But the real kicker was that these folks, I think they had to work 30 hours a week. This is part of that act. They also, these were single mothers and everything, so this took up their whole life. And they had a time limit, the welfare time limit. So they would get put in this program, they worked full-time, essentially, for the whole, I think, was it 9 months or something? What was the limit in those days for the welfare? And when their welfare ran out, they were not only out of welfare, but out of a job, because they would just got kicked off the program, and there was no place for them to go within transit or anything like that. So one more thing, very quickly, that I think is kind of ironic. A comrade here mentioned about the interminable meetings of the Occupy Wall Street boys. Well, it turns out that the venue for those meetings, I think, was the public spaces of the Goldman Sachs building.
The public-private spaces, yeah.
In order to get their building built, they had to dedicate certain areas in New York, and I just thought that was kind of ironic.
Thank you for that comment. So I want to say, I wish the entire labor movement was like Local 100.
That was Frances Fox Piven on What Movements Do. She spoke at the International Socialist Conference in Chicago. Frances Fox Piven is a leading activist scholar. She's Distinguished Professor of Political Science and Sociology at the City University of New York. She's the author of many books, including Challenging Authority and Lessons for Our Struggle. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We are independent and part of the nonprofit media education organization, Rise Up. We are supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature progressive voices rarely heard in the media, such as Chris Hedges, Ralph Nader, Barbara Ehrenreich, Tariq Ali, Angela Davis, and Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for CDs, MP3s, or written transcripts of today's program, Frances Fox Piven on What Movements Do, call us at 1-800-444-1977.
Don't let David confuse you. We are here as KABU. And I'm Becky.
And I'm Ani.
Yes. And we are looking for you to call a different number, just slightly different. It is 877-500-5266. You've got 2 minutes to help us get to that $300 in order to be sustainable for the next little while for the year. You, our members, are our most prevalent, our biggest source of support to keep us independent. And you are able to help all the time by calling 877-500-5266 with your pledge of support on a monthly basis. Become a monthly member now.
That's right. It is, in fact, our grassroots supporters, that's you, that demand our independence and that, in fact, allow us to be independent because your financial support makes it so. This is the time to step forward. It is time for you to claim the airwaves and become a member of KABU this morning. Please do dial 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. This is your moment. Please step forward and help us raise that $300 goal for alternative radio. You just heard it. And coming right up, Air Cascadia. Keep KABU financially strong with your support. 877-500-5266.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and at 11, Stage and Studio presents two new shows focusing on African-American stories, Skeleton Crew at the Artist Repertory Theater and The Color Purple at Portland Center Stage. At 11:30, Art Focus talks to sculptor Dana Lynn Lewis about her new project, Gather, Make Shelter in Pioneer Courthouse Square. All of these KABU programs are made possible by your support. We'd like you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266.
KABU would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bread and Ink Cafe, located at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland, serving family-style breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Lunch provided by Aviv, located at 1125 Southeast Division Street in the Hosford-Abernethy neighborhood. Open daily from lunch to dinner, Aviv serves vegan-friendly Middle Eastern cuisine. Dinner provided by Le Bistro Montage, located in Portland's industrial